Skull, nothing serious. Where do you think we are?
I think we are in the longest tunnel I've ever seen, I said. It was more and more like a tunnel now. The floor was still linoleum and the walls were still whitewashed, but the lights were getting more spread out, so you definitely had the feeling you were underground.
I wonder if they caught the others, Marco said.
Now do you see why it's crazy to think we can beat the Yerkes? I mean, come on, we can barely beat zoo security.
We haven't beat anyone yet, I said grimly.
Look. Way up ahead, there were two guys in brown uniforms.
Maybe they don't know who we are, Marco suggested. They might think we're regular employees.
Maybe, but not if they get a good look at us, I pointed. There's a turnoff. Take it.
We turned. At the same time, the guards started yelling. The side corridor grew narrow, too narrow for the golf cart.
Ditch it!
I jumped out. Marco jumped after me. We could hear the guards' footsteps as they ran down the main tunnel. These guys were in better shape than the old man. These guys could run. The corridor ended abruptly. There were two doors, one a little to the left, one a little farther to the right. They were labeled P201 and P203.
No help at all.
Pick a door, Marco said. I took a deep breath.
Door number one.
I opened P201. A blast of fresh air hit me. Sunlight blinded me. I blinked, trying to get my eyes to adjust.
The rhinoceros blinked too. Ah! I yelled.
Ah! Marco yelled.
We jumped back and slammed the door.
Wrong door, Marco said.
Definitely wrong, I agreed.
Hey, you kids, stop right there.
The guards were just at the end of the corridor.
Gotta try door number two, I said.
Do it.
We opened the door and ran through. There were trees all around us, trees and grass. We were in the shade. Sunlight filtered down through the leaves. Just ahead, the bushes gave way to open grass.
Where are we? Marco asked.
Like I know?
We worked our way through some bushes, keeping a careful eye out in all directions. We didn't see any animals, just some birds up in the trees.
Hey, there are people, Marco said.
He dropped down behind a bush and pointed. There were people lined up behind a railing. They were high up, or else we were low down. I parted the bushes to get a better look. The people were leaning against a railing at the top of a high concrete wall. They couldn't see us because of the bushes, but they were definitely all staring at something.
We're definitely in one of the habitats, I said. Those are people looking at whatever is in here with us.
I'm just hoping it isn't that rhino. That thing was way too big.
How do we get out of here?
I don't know. Let's just get away from the door. Those guards will be coming after us any second.
But, you know, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, why haven't those guards come after us yet?
Marco and I crawled through the bushes and around the bases of the big trees. We reached a corner of the wall, hidden from all the people above.
That is an awfully high wall, Marco observed. That's gotta be 30 feet high. This is not good.
That wall is high for a reason. There's something in here that they don't want to escape.
I scanned the wall. There was a steel ladder set into the concrete about 50 yards away.
I guess that's the only way out.
Let me ask you something, Marco said. Why haven't the guards come after us? I mean, if this was like the deer and antelope exhibit, they'd come right in, wouldn't they?
We have to think, not panic, I said. I am trying not to think about why the guards didn't come in here.
I moved back into the shadows of the bushes.
Besides, maybe there's nothing in here at all.
I squatted down on my haunches. My butt touched something warm. I had a terrible feeling right at that moment. I looked up and saw Marco. Normally, Marco has kind of a dark, tanned face, but his face was white, and his eyes were very large.
Marco, I said, very slowly and very quietly. Is there something behind me?
He nodded.
What is it, Marco?
Jake? It's a tiger.
Chapter 20.
A male Siberian tiger, to be exact. 10 feet long. 700 pounds of deadly speed and unbelievable power. You know those old Tarzan movies you see on TV sometimes where Tarzan is wrestling a tiger and actually winning? Let me tell you something. You want to know what your chances are of wrestling a tiger and coming out alive? They're about the same as your chances of jumping off the Empire State Building and surviving.
I have an idea, Marco said shakily. Let's leave.
Don't run, I said. It might just get his attention.
I think he's noticed us, Marco said. I think he knows we're here, Jake. I think he's looking right at us. Look at his teeth.
Don't freak. I have an idea. The morphing. If I acquire him, it'll put him in a trance.
Acquire? Acquire what? You can't acquire anything about him. He's the acquirer, and you're the acquiree. He's going to acquire your butt for dinner. He's going to acquire you and spit out the bones.
I swallowed hard. I tried to touch the tiger, but my hand was shaking too much. I took a couple of deep breaths. I heard somewhere that's supposed to calm you down. I guess it works. Unless you're practically sitting on a tiger. Then absolutely nothing calms you down.
Nice tiger, I whispered.
He just watched me. He had this lazy, who cares look. This look of total, complete, absolute confidence. Almost like he thought I was funny. Like maybe he enjoyed watching me shiver and shake.
Please don't kill me, I said. Don't kill me either, Marco added.
I reached my shaking hand toward the tiger. His eyes followed my hand. I touched his flank. It rose and fell with his breathing.
Concentrate, Marco whispered.
I was already concentrating real hard on the tiger. I was concentrating on his teeth. I was concentrating on the rippling muscles under his pale orange and black pelt. I was totally concentrating on the fact that he could swing that big massive paw of his and send my head flying across the grass like a soccer ball. Then the tiger's breathing slowed. His eyes fluttered a little and slowly closed.
How long does the trance last? Marco whispered.
Well, about 10 seconds after you break contact. That's what it was with Homer.
10 seconds? 10 seconds?
Yeah, so be ready to run.
I've been ready to run.
I started to pull away, but then I hesitated. It was a strange moment because right then I realized what I was doing. It hit me. This tiger was becoming part of me. All that power and confidence was becoming part of me.
He's beautiful, isn't he?
I said. I expected Marco to say something sarcastic, but he said,
Yes, he's magnificent.
Then he added, But let's get out of here before he shows us why he's king of the jungle. That's lions, I said. They're supposed to be king of the jungle. But let's not tell him that. You ready? He nodded. Now! I yelled. I jumped up and we tore for the ladder. In my head, I was counting off the seconds. 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000. Something moved. Fast. An orange and black blur. Right then, I realized it. Duh! There was more than one tiger in the habitat. I heard screams coming from the spectators above. I guess they could see us now that we were out of the bushes. Marco leaped and grabbed the rungs of the ladder. He scrambled up. I was about 1/10 of a second behind him. The tiger leaped. His claws scraped the concrete just inches below me. And then he let out a roar that made the rungs of the ladder vibrate in my hands. What a noise. It echoed and reverberated and made my insides turn to liquid. Marco practically flew up the ladder and over the side of the wall. I flew right after him. It's amazing how fast you can climb a ladder when there's a tiger roaring for your blood.
There they are, someone yelled. Get them! Stop!
Guards, at least 3 of them.
Should we morph? Marco yelled to me.
No, just head for the crowds. There, over by the dolphin tank. It was a close call, but we made it to a big crowd just a dozen feet ahead of the guards. From that point, all we had to do was hunch down and squirm between all the people till the guards lost sight of us. We worked our way to the front gate, always crouching so our heads wouldn't show above the crowds.
What did you do, morph into a midget?
It was Rachel. She was right in front of me, looking amused.
Tobias and Cassie were there, too.
The guards were after us, I said. I had almost stopped shaking from my close encounter with the big cats. Almost.
Oh, quit playing around, Jake, Rachel said. Let's get out of here. I have to be home for dinner.
It turned out the other three had not been chased at all. They'd lost the guards easily and had just gone on acquiring morphs while Marco and I were risking our lives in the tiger habitat. The most annoying thing was that none of them even believed our story. Marco and I were a little resentful over that. We climbed on board the bus and practically collapsed into the seats.
We could have been killed, Marco said, pouting. Really, I'm telling you, it was down to a few inches.
Yeah, whatever, Rachel said. Don't obsess over it. After all, we still have tonight to deal with. Whatever danger you think you had today, it will probably be nothing next to what's going to happen tonight.
Tonight, Cassie shook her head. And I haven't even thought about studying for that math test tomorrow.
Rachel laughed. We may not have to worry about tomorrow.
Thank you, little Miss Cheerful, Marco muttered under his breath.
Chapter 21.
Where have you been all afternoon and evening?
My mom asked me as we sat down for dinner. My family is very old-fashioned about dinner. We all have to sit at the table, no TV. My mom's a writer, so she hates TV unless it's one of her favorite programs.
Where have I been? I repeated the question. Hanging out? You know, hanging with Marco?
I don't know why you bother to ask. My dad said. His answer is always the same. Hanging out.
So what did you do at work today, Dad? I asked him.
Hung out, he said.
He gave me a wink and we all laughed. I glanced over at Tom. He was eating chicken cacciatore like the rest of us and laughing. He seemed so normal.
You doing anything tonight, Tom? I asked him.
Why?
I tried to look casual.
You know, I was thinking maybe we could shoot some hoops, I said. Maybe you could teach me some new moves and I could take another shot at making the team.
Sorry, man, he said. I have things to do tonight.
Yeah, like what?
I asked.
Hanging out, no doubt, my mom said. Eat the broccoli, Jake. It's good for you. It's full of trace minerals and vitamins you can't get anywhere else.
Okay, I said to my mom.
You know how much I love trace minerals.
I popped the smallest piece of broccoli I could find and tried to gag it down. I guess it wasn't any worse than eating a live spider.
So, Tom, what was it you said you were doing?
I asked again. He gave me a dirty look.
Do I have to check in with you now? I have things to do. Is that okay, little brother? A girl, my dad commented. I know these things. I'm a doctor.
No, Dad, not a girl, I wanted to say. A yerk pool.
What's a yerk pool, Mom? Well, it's kind of a long story.
I decided to try one more time. I guess a part of me still refused to believe what Tom was.
Maybe you're just afraid to shoot hoops with me. Maybe I'd kick your butt.
Yeah, that's it. Happy now?
Tom sneered. His gaze met mine. Was there some sign in those eyes? Some evidence of the selfish, evil creature that was controlling him? No. I wish there had been. But there is no way to know who is a controller and who isn't. No way. It's what makes them so hard to stop. They can be anyone, anywhere. Even a person you think you know, a person you admire, look up to, love. I broke my gaze away from Tom's and looked down at my food. A few minutes later, Tom got up to go. I knew where he was going. After he left, I went to the upstairs phone, where my parents couldn't overhear me. I called Marco.
He's on his way, I said.
I called Tobias and Rachel. I tried to call Cassie, but I got her mother instead.
She's not in, her mom said.
She sounded worried. She wasn't home for dinner. She went out to feed some of the animals and didn't come back. My stomach clenched. She's probably just out riding one of the horses, I said, trying to reassure myself as much as Cassie's mom. You know, Cassie. All the horses are in their stalls, she said. I took a couple of deep breaths. Something was wrong. What had happened to Cassie?
I'll look around for her, I said. Don't worry. I'll bet she just saw some injured animal or something and went off to rescue it. You know, Cassie, I said again.
Yes, I'm sure she's fine.
Right. She was about as sure as I was. But what could I do? The plan was set to attack the Yerk Pool and rescue Tom. Maybe Cassie was already at the school, waiting.
Maybe. I had a very bad feeling as I rode my bike to the school. I hid the bike across the street, the way we had planned. Then I hooked up with Marco and Rachel.
Cassie's missing, I said. And where's Tobias?
Rachel pointed up at the sky. The sun was setting fast, but I could see Tobias circling high overhead.
What is the matter with him? I exploded. He's got a 2-hour time limit, and we don't know how long this is going to take.
Maybe we should bail until we find out what happened with Cassie, Rachel said.
Could be she's just scared, Marco said. I am.
Maybe, I agreed, although I doubted it.
But they say you never know who's going to be brave or cowardly in a battle.
I just hoped I wasn't a coward. The truth was, my mouth was already dry and my heart was already pounding. And we hadn't even done anything yet.
Tobias swooped down and perched on Rachel's shoulder. It surprised me a little. Why would Tobias perch on Rachel's shoulder?
And she didn't seem at all annoyed. She rubbed her head against him a little.
Are we doing this or not? Tobias asked.
This was not starting off right at all. The bad feeling in my stomach was just getting worse. Cassie missing, Tobias already morphed. Everyone was looking at me, waiting for me to decide.
Yeah, we're doing it, I said.
The school was locked up for the night, but Marco had taken care of that little problem. He knew of a window in the science lab that didn't lock. We crawled into the science lab through the window. It was dark, except for the dying light of the sun that glinted off the glass beakers and test tubes. Tobias drifted through and landed neatly on the teacher's desk.
Let me take a look, I said.
I opened the door as slowly as I could and peeked out through the crack. I could see down the nearly dark hallway to the janitor's closet. Instantly, I pulled back in.
There are people out there, I said. 3 people, heading into the closet.
Controllers? Rachel said. I guess it's dinner time for Yerks. None of us thought that was very funny.
How are we going to get in there?
Marco asked. Wait a minute, Rachel said. Do all the controllers know each other by sight? I mean, maybe we're controllers, right?
So we just walk right on in, like we belong there? Marco asked. Wonderful plan, Rachel. I have a better idea. Let's just kill ourselves now and get it over with.
Maybe Rachel's right, I said.
Big maybe, Marco pointed out. Big, huge maybe. How about Tom? He would know whether you were a controller.
I cracked the door again and looked out.
I think Tom's already down there, I said. Besides, the hallway's empty now. I guess they all...
I fell silent.
Wait, here comes someone.
I stared. It wasn't easy to see faces in the gloom. I could tell there were 2 people. One was wearing a uniform. It was the controller policeman. And he was rudely yanking someone along with him. I could see that it was a girl. I didn't really want to see any more.
Tobias, I said, I need you to use your hawk's eyes.
Tobias fluttered over and stood on my shoulder. He peeked his fierce head out into the hall and then drew back.
Yes, he said. It's her.
I felt like the floor had opened underneath me. Marco grabbed me because I looked like I was about to fall over.
They have her, I whispered. The controllers. They have Cassie.
Chapter 22.
Who has Cassie? How?
Rachel stammered.
That policeman. The controller. The one who came out to Cassie's farm. The one who was at the sharing meeting. He has her. He saw her at the meeting trying to get close to the full members.
Rachel let go a few choice words. We hadn't even started, and already everything was a disaster.
Okay, I said grimly. We go ahead, like Rachel said. We figure there are too many controllers for all of them to know each other. I mean, they add new bodies all the time, right? So maybe we're new controllers, right?
Oh, man,
Marco moaned.
You have a better idea? I snapped.
No, he said. I think we go ahead. We take our chances. Let's rock and roll.
Okay, then. Everyone act cool. I looked at Tobias. Too late for you to morph back now, but try not to let them see you. Rachel, Marco, and I stepped out into the dark hallway. My legs were stiff. My knees were rickety. I was walking like Frankenstein's monster trying to look casual. We headed for the janitor's closet. Fortunately, no one else was in the hallway. We entered the tiny room and stepped inside. I tried to recall the sequence for opening the door. Faucet to the left, then twist the second hook around to the right. The door swung open. There was more noise than there had been the other day. Or maybe it was just that my human ears heard it better than my lizard ears had. There was a deep sloshing, swooshing sound, almost like gentle surf breaking on the shore. But that was the nice sound. The other sounds were horrifying. Despairing cries, terrified screams, shouts, shrieking triumphant laughter.
You sure this is just the Yerk Pool? Marco said in a nervous, shaky voice. I see a guy with horns and a pitchfork, and I am out of here.
I stepped into the opening. The stairs were steep, and there was no rail, so you felt like you were about to pitch forward with every step. We descended together. The door closed automatically behind us. At first, I guess I expected there to be maybe a couple dozen steps, but the steps never ended. We just kept walking, and there were always more steps. The walls were dirt, then quickly became rock as we went down, down, down. It felt like those stairs would never end.
Some superior aliens, Marco whispered. You'd think they could have put in an elevator.
We all giggled a little, very little. Suddenly, the rock walls widened out. We had emerged into a huge cavern. And when I say huge, I mean huge. They could have played the Super Bowl in there and had room left over for a couple of malls. It was like a giant bowl turned upside down, all carved out of solid rock. At the very top of the bowl was the faint outline of a hole. I thought I could see stars through it. All around the outer edges of the cavern, I could see other stairways like ours. They seemed to come from every direction, appearing out of the rock walls and leading down to the floor of the cavern. We clustered closer to the center of the stairway. It was a sheer drop off the side of the stairs.
This is gigantic, Marco said. This isn't just under the school. This is under half the town. Those stairways must lead up to a dozen secret entrances.
He shook his head.
Jake, they have this entire area set up with secret passageways. Oh, man, this is worse. This is so much worse. So much bigger.
I felt the same despair. We were fools. This wasn't some little group of alien bad guys we were dealing with. To build this underground city, these guys had power we couldn't even imagine. That's almost what it was, a city. There were buildings and sheds all around the rim of the cavern, and we could see yellow caterpillar earth movers and cranes at work on the far side of the cavern. They seemed weirdly normal in this incredible place. And there were creatures everywhere, taxons, hork-bajir, and other things I couldn't even begin to guess at. But mostly, there were humans. A lot of them. At the very center of the cavern was a pool, like a small lake, maybe 100 feet across, and perfectly round, only the water wasn't exactly water. It moved more like melted lead and was about the same color. The sloshing sound we could hear was the liquid of the pool being rippled and splashed by hundreds of fast-moving things below the surface. I knew what they were. Yerks. Yerks in their natural slug-like state. They were swimming and cavorting in the pool like kids on a hot day. Near the edge of the pool were cages. In the cages were Hork-Bajir and human beings. Some of the humans screamed for help. Some cried silently. Some just sat and waited, all hope lost. There were adults there, and kids, women and men, more than 100 packed 10 to a cage. The captive Hork-Bajir were kept in separate, stronger cages. They paced and howled and slashed at the air with their bladed arms. I almost lost hope. I felt like my heart had stopped. This was a place of unimaginable horror, and we were so few and so weak. Below us on the stairs, I could see the controller cop and Cassie. He was dragging her roughly whenever she stumbled. They had reached the bottom of the stairs. "I'm going to morph," I said. "I'm going to get Cassie away from him." Marco put his hand on my shoulder.
"Not time yet, dude. Be cool."
"Cassie's okay, Jake," Tobias said. "She isn't hurt, just scared."
"He'd better not hurt her," I said. "Keep an eye on them, Tobias."
There were two low steel piers built out over the pool. On one, Hork-Bajir controllers politely guarded a line of humans and Hork-Bajir and taxons. This was the unloading station. One by one, the people knelt down, bent over, and dipped their heads toward the slimy surface of the pool. The Hork-Bajir helped them. As we watched, a woman calmly bent over, her head just inches above the lead-gray pool. A Hork-Bajir held her elbow gently to help her keep her balance. Then we saw the thing dribbling, sliding, squirming, crawling out of her ear. A yerk!
"Oh no,"
Rachel moaned. She sounded like she might be sick.
"Oh no, no."
When the yerk was all the way out of the poor woman's head, it dropped into the pool and disappeared beneath the turbulent surface. Instantly, the woman cried out,
"You filth! Let me go! Let me go! I am a free woman! You can't keep doing this! I am not a slave! Let me go!"
Two Hork-Bajir grabbed her. They dragged the woman to the nearest cage and threw her in.
"Help!"
the woman screamed.
"Oh, please, someone help! Help us all!"
Chapter 23.
"Help! Please, someone help us!"
We had been hearing cries like that all the way down those steps, but now we were close enough to give the cries a human face. It cut straight to my soul. There was a second steel pier. That was the loading station. There, the host bodies were dragged from their holding cages to have the yerks re-enter their heads. It was a pretty basic process. They grabbed the hosts, whether human or Hork-Bajir, and forced their heads down into the pool. The people sometimes fought and screamed, and sometimes just cried, but they always lost. When their heads were yanked back up out of the pool, we could see the slugs still slithering into their ears. After a few minutes, they would become calm again as the yerks regained control. Then off they went, once more slaves of the yerks. It was a horrible assembly line, from the unloading pier to the holding cages to the infestation pier. They moved the poor victims through at a pretty speedy rate. But there was another area we could only now see. There, humans and Hork-Bajir waited on comfortable chairs, sipping drinks and actually watching TV. Taxons squirmed around like gigantic spiny maggots. I heard the faint sound of a television set. I was sure I could hear laughter from the humans. They were watching the show and having a good laugh.
"Those are the voluntary hosts," Tobias said. "Collaborators."
"What are you talking about?" I demanded.
"You remember what the Andalite told us? Many humans and Ork-Bajir are voluntary hosts, Tobias replied. The Yerks persuade them to let them take over.
I can't believe that, Rachel said. No person would ever let this happen to them. No one would ever give up control of himself.
Some people are scum, Rachel, Marco said. Sorry to burst your balloon. The Yerks convinced them that taking on a Yerk will solve all their problems. I think that's what the sharing is all about. People believe that by becoming something different, they can leave behind all their pain.
Like spending all their time as a hawk, Marco pointed out. Tobias had nothing to say to that. He spread his wings and flew up and away.
Tobias, come back, I called to him. We have to get moving, Rachel said. We've been standing here staring for too long. She looked at Marco. Don't be a jerk to Tobias, okay? We need everyone.
Tobias came swooping back toward us. Cassie, he said. She's on the pier, the infestation pier. They're going to turn her into a host.
With my normal human eyes, I couldn't see that well in the purple gloom. I could just make out the cop's uniform and the small shape beside him.
Do you see Tom? I asked Tobias.
In answer, he flapped his powerful wings and gained altitude. I saw him high over the pool. Then he came back toward us in a power dive.
I see him, he said.
I hesitated before asking. I wasn't sure I wanted to know the answer. Is he in the cages, or is he voluntary?
He's in a cage, Tobias said. He's yelling his brains out at the Ork-Bajir guards.
Yes, I knew Tom would never have gone voluntarily. I knew they must have taken him kicking and punching.
Cassie is getting near the end of the pier, Tobias warned. We only have a few minutes before they infest her.
It was time. We were at the bottom of the steps. We ran over to hide behind a storage shed of some kind. Marco pulled me around the corner, drawing me close so that I could hear him whisper,
Look, before we do this, there's one thing, Jake. You have to promise me.
I knew what he was going to say.
If I have to die, okay, but don't let them take me. Don't let them put one of those things in my head.
It'll be okay.
You!
A voice yelled, a human voice.
You two! Who are you?
I spun around. A man, just one man. But beside him, flanking him, was a big Ork-Bajir, looking suspicious. And on the other side, a taxon. Somehow the man hadn't seen Rachel. She was just around the corner of the building, but he had seen Marco and me talking. I guess it hadn't looked quite right to him.
Us? Marco asked. Who are we?
Hey, who are you?
Take them,
the man ordered. The Ork-Bajir advanced on us. The taxon slithered forward on its dozens of sharp, spiny legs, red jelly eyes quivering, mouth opening and closing in anticipation. I knew I had to morph, but I was frozen with fear. Then I saw Rachel. She had gotten around behind the controllers, and she was getting very, very large. Chapter 24. Rachel was getting larger very fast. Huge leathery ears sprouted suddenly from the side of her head. Her nose stretched and stretched till it was longer than her body had been to start with. Her arms and legs were big as tree trunks, and from her mouth grew two enormous curved teeth. My cousin Rachel now stood almost 13 feet high and weighed about 14,000 pounds. The weird thing was, I was happy about all this. Ha ha! I heard Rachel's triumphant laugh. I did it! The Ork-Bajir and the taxon came closer. Rachel began twitching her little ropey tail. Her front legs pawed the dirt floor of the cavern. She raised her massive head and stuck out her 3-foot-long tusks. The taxon was the first to notice her with his all-around red jelly eyes, but I guess he didn't know how to react. Rachel charged. One minute she was standing there, and the next minute she was barreling forward like an out-of-control 18-wheeler. The Ork-Bajir was fast. He spun around and slashed at her trunk with his elbow blade. Too little, too late. Rachel was moving, and no little flesh wound was going to stop her.
Puny little nothing, Rachel cried, outraged. You attack me?
The Ork-Bajir went down,
crushed under her monstrous feet. He bellowed, but Rachel's trumpeting was louder. The taxon tried to run. It turns out taxons can move when they want to. It also turns out elephants are faster than you think. They can be very fast. Rachel's foot caught the taxon's back end. The needle legs collapsed, cracking like broken twigs. Yellow goo oozed from the popped flesh of the big worm. She just kept rolling over him, leaving behind a big, extremely disgusting pile of goo. The foul smell of the squashed taxon nearly knocked me out. The human was still just standing there. He said,
"An elephant?"
Like he couldn't even think about it being real. Rachel wrapped her trunk around his middle. "Yeah," we heard Rachel say. "An elephant." The man screamed. I guess he figured out it was real. Rachel threw him through the air. I never saw where he landed. "Quick," I yelled at Marco. "Morph!"
"Nice work, Rachel," Marco said. "Remind me not to ever make you mad."
I focused on the tiger. I knew his DNA pattern was in me. I thought of him lying there in his habitat at the gardens, wishing he were back in the jungle, hunting and taking down his prey. I guessed maybe he wouldn't mind the use I was making of his DNA. This wasn't quite a jungle, but it would have to do.
"More Hork-Bajir coming," Rachel said.
Rachel turned to face them, tusks ready. I felt the morph begin. The hair grew from my face. The tail squirted out behind me. My arms bulged and rippled. They were massive. My shirt ripped. I fell forward onto my hands. Now my front legs. The power. It was electric. It was like a slow-motion explosion. I could feel the power of the tiger growing inside me. I watched claws, long, wickedly curved, tearing, ripping, shredding claws, grow from my puny human hands. I could feel the teeth sprouting in my mouth. My eyes looked through the darkness like it was broad daylight. But most of all, the power, the sheer, incredible power. I was afraid of nothing. Hork-Bajir were running at me, their arm blades slashing at the air. I opened my mouth and I roared. The Hork-Bajir stopped dead in their tracks. "That's right, my little Hork-Bajir friends," the human part of my brain thought. "Time to meet the tiger." The muscles in my back legs coiled up. I bared my teeth and gave them another roar loud enough to make the ground quiver. I leaped through the air, claws outstretched. Chapter 25. I sailed through the air and struck the closest Hork-Bajir in the chest. Down he went with me on top of him. He rolled over and tried to get up. He was fast. I was faster. He struck at me with his razored arm. I ducked under the blow. My left paw swung so fast even I couldn't see it. It left four oozing tracks across the Hork-Bajir's shoulder. Another Hork-Bajir. Wrist blades, elbow blades, and talons whizzed. They were like a pair of lawnmowers on full throttle. And still, I was faster. I can't even remember what happened next. All I have is this image of the tiger, of me, with claws slashing and jaws snapping. I was a whirlwind of orange fur and black stripes. The Hork-Bajir fell back. I roared. They turned and ran. On one side, I saw Rachel. She lifted a Hork-Bajir up on her tusks and tossed him back over her shoulder like he was a doll. And then I saw Marco. Big Jim's massive body was ripping its way out of Marco's slight frame. "Just call me King," Marco said. "King Kong." The truth is, like Cassie said, gorillas are very gentle, peaceful, quiet creatures. The truth also is that they are strong. Real strong. Basically, compared to a gorilla, a man is something made out of toothpicks. Now, Hork-Bajir are pretty large creatures. They stand about 7 feet high and are built for trouble. But Marco swung one big gorilla fist and hit the nearest Hork-Bajir in the stomach. The Hork-Bajir went down. Hard. I roared. Rachel trumpeted. Marco lifted the Hork-Bajir up and tossed him aside like a rag doll. The rest of the Hork-Bajir turned and ran.
Now, I shouted, before they get organized again. We charged. Rachel just plowed right through some of the small sheds and buildings like Godzilla heading for Tokyo. Marco came loping along, swinging his massive forearms, punching anything that got in his way. Whatever he punched stayed down. And I ran right down the middle, looking for any controller dumb enough to mess with me. We reached the cages. The people and Hork-Bajir inside shrank back from us. They were almost as afraid of us as they were of the controllers. Let's face it, a rescue party made up of an elephant, a gorilla, and a tiger is not what they'd been hoping for. Marco began ripping at a lock on one of the cages. The lock gave way. The door flew open. Marco did something very human to reassure them. He made a little bow, then crooked his finger at them as if to say, "Come on out." Tom was the first out. He looked scared and mad and determined. I was going to send him a thought message, telling him who I was, but suddenly there was Rachel screaming in my head. "Jake," Rachel said. "Look, Cassie." Cassie was nearly at the end of the infestation pier. The Hork-Bajir and Taxon guards were still sticking to their duties. As I watched, another human was shoved headfirst into the Yerk pool. "Cassie is next," I cried. "Don't worry," Marco said. "We'll take care of Tom. Go. Go before they do it to her." I hesitated for only a second, as a thousand thoughts went through my head. Later, I would think about that moment. Think maybe, if only. I broke into a run. I had to get to her. As I watched, the two Hork-Bajir on the pier grabbed Cassie by the arms. "No!" she cried. I tore at full speed. I leaped over Taxons. I dodged around Hork-Bajir. I practically flew. But I couldn't really fly, not the way Tobias could. I saw him high, high up in the cavern. Down he came, like a bullet. The talons came forward. Tobias hit the first Hork-Bajir at about 50 miles an hour. He swooped away, leaving the alien clutching at the slimy mess where his eyes used to be. That was all Cassie needed. She broke away and ran back down the pier. I finally got there and went after the remaining Hork-Bajir controller. "Morph!" I yelled to Cassie. "Morph and head back for the stairs!" She looked at the other humans and Hork-Bajir behind her in the line.
"Run! All of you, run!"
They did. Cassie plowed into the panicky crowd. Moments later, a black-maned head appeared above the shoulders of the crowd. Cassie had become a horse and was racing for the stairs. I started after her, racing back around the pool toward Marco, Rachel, Tom, and the crowd of hosts they'd freed from the cages. The controllers were starting to get organized. A group of Taxons were slithering out to stop Cassie and me. Both the Hork-Bajir and the Taxons were carrying weapons now.
"Up and over,"
I said to Cassie as we neared the line of Taxons.
"Up and over,"
she yelled back. I leaped. Cassie jumped. Side by side, we sailed over the startled Taxons. They fired their handheld Dracon beams, but too late. The beams sizzled the air behind us, and we blew past. I could see Rachel's towering gray bulk just ahead. The stairs were near. I saw Marco with Tom. We were going to make it. And then he stepped out daintily from a group of Hork-Bajir. He seemed almost harmless in his andalite body, a gentle half-deer, half-human-looking creature with bluish fur and an extra set of eyes on comical stalks. Visser III didn't look all that scary, not compared to the Hork-Bajir, the Taxons, or even our own Earth animals. But Visser III had an andalite body. He had an andalite's power to morph. And he had been all over the universe acquiring the genetic patterns of monsters like nothing ever seen on Earth. A Taxon slithered up beside Visser III and spoke. It was a weird, half-whistling sound. Visser III said nothing. He just looked at me with the horizontal slits that were his eyes.
"This Taxon fool says you are wild animals," Visser III said. "He wants to know if he and his brothers can eat you."
He laughed silently.
but I know you are not animals. I know who and what you are. So, not all of you Andalites died when I burned your ship.
It took me a couple of seconds to realize what he meant. Then it hit me. Of course. He thought we were Andalites. He'd guessed that we were morphs, not real animals. And he knew that the Andalites were the only species with morphing technology.
I compliment you on getting this far, but it will accomplish nothing, because now, my brave Andalite warriors, it is time. Time to die.
He began to morph.
I acquired this body on the fourth moon of the second planet of a dying star. Like it?
I realized I'd been wrong to be hopeful. We were not going to make it. Chapter 26. From Visser III's Andalite body, the creature grew, tall as a tree, towering over even Rachel. 8 massive legs, 8 long, spindly arms, each ending in a 3-fingered claw. And from the place where the top set of arms grew, came the heads. Heads, plural, 8 of them. This creature had a thing for the number 8. Even the Hork-Bajir controllers backed away. Even they didn't want to be near Visser III when he morphed this way. But the taxons edged in closer, crowding around their leader like a pack of hungry dogs looking for table scraps. I was frozen in terror, stunned. Even the tiger that was a part of me was confused and worried. I had started to think that with our morphed bodies, we could take on anything. But we couldn't take on this monster. Not and survive. Run! I yelled to the others. Up the stairs! Cassie nudged 2 of the humans from the cages and tossed back her head. They figured out what she wanted and climbed on her back. Then she galloped toward the stairs.
Yes! Run! Visser III crowed. It makes a more challenging target.
Then Visser III struck. From one of the heads, a round spinning ball of flame erupted. A ball of flame that flew like a missile. It skimmed through the air and splatted against the back of one of the women riding Cassie. Ah! She fell off, screaming and rolling around to put out the flames. Cassie kept going with only one rider. She reached the base of the stairs.
Target practice!
Visser III laughed. He fired fireball after fireball, one head after another. One singed my shoulder and flew past. One hit Rachel in the ear and made her scream in my head and trumpet in terror. The air was full of fire.
We have to get out of here, Marco yelled.
Yes, run! Run for the stairs, I repeated. Rachel, get moving! Clear a path!
A big swarm of us was heading for the stairs, but the taxons had closed in around us. Anyone that got away from Visser III was swarmed over by the taxons. I saw Tom out of the corner of my eye. He was swinging his fists at a pair of taxons that were circling around him. Tom couldn't hurt them, but he was trying just the same. Rachel ran over and plowed into one of them, crushing him beneath her tree trunk legs. Marco threw his arms around the second taxon and twisted till it split open, spilling its putrid guts all over the floor. Rachel had hit the bottom few stairs and stopped. Elephant bodies are great for some things, but they are useless for climbing stairs. Morph back, I told Rachel. She began to shrink almost immediately, but there wasn't time to wait until the morphing was complete. Rachel started up the stairs as a shifting mass of gray and pink, part human, part elephant, staggering on weird, half-finished legs and dragging a shriveled trunk that made her pretty face into something awful to see. We ran, but it was impossible. By the time we had climbed a few dozen stairs, there were only a few free humans and 2 free Hork-Bajir with us. The rest had all been recaptured or burned. A fireball exploded at my feet and I snarled, but still we retreated. We were 100 feet up the stairs when the last 2 freed Hork-Bajir were brought down by the Visser's fireballs. They fell in flames. The Visser was climbing the stairs now, all alone. He was so big he barely fit on the stairs. I knew when we reached the point where the walls closed in around the stairs that we would be safe from Visser III.
Glancing up, I saw that Cassie was almost to safety above us, with one human rider. The rest of us, along with Tom and a pitiful handful of freed humans, were bunched together. Visser 3 began pelting the staircase ahead of us with fire. We were trapped. Fire ahead, Visser 3 himself behind.
"No," I heard a familiar voice say. "No, you filthy creep! You aren't going to win this time!"
It was Tom. All alone, he charged at Visser 3, armed with nothing but his fists. One of the Visser's arms came down and swung at him. "Tom!" I cried. My tiger body roared with all its might, but the sound was lost in the noise of crying humans and whistling taxons. I saw Tom stagger from the Visser's blow. I saw him fall from the edge of the stairs. I went a little crazy. I was on the Visser before I knew what was happening. On him, digging my claws into his flesh. I twisted up and behind one of his 8 heads. The tiger in me knew what to do. I sank my teeth into his neck and clamped my powerful jaws and held on. Another head turned back and aimed a fireball at me. I dodged the first fireball. The second burned my flank. I jumped clear. The Visser roared in pain. I roared in hatred. And we ran up those stairs with 100 nightmares on our heels. Chapter 27. We ran, exhausted and burned and terrified. We ran. Visser 3 had made one mistake. He was too large in his morph to follow us much farther up the stairs. I heard Visser 3 yell something as we finally got away. He said,
"I'll kill you all, Andalites. Run away. It doesn't matter. I'll kill you all."
Actually, I think it did matter. We hadn't exactly destroyed Visser 3, but we had come out of it alive. We Animorphs. The final count was exactly one human freed, the woman who rode Cassie's back up out of that hellish pit. And Cassie had gotten away clean. It had been the suspicious controller policeman who had grabbed her. He was the only controller to know her name, where she lived, and that she had been spying on the sharing. Cassie said we didn't have to worry about him anymore. She didn't want to talk about what had happened to him. As for Tom, my brother, Tom was not freed. I was lying in my bed, shaking and shivering and crying from the after effects of terror, when I heard him come home later that night. He never knew that I was the tiger. He never knew how close I had come to freeing him. He was a controller again. The yerk was in his head once more. Cassie and Marco and Rachel and I had all made it up those stairs. We had emerged into the hallway of a school that would never seem the same to us again. And Tobias? He survived, too. It was almost morning when I was awakened from dead sleep by feathery beating on my window. I opened it, and Tobias flew in.
"You made it," I said. "Oh, man, you had me scared. I figured you were still trapped down there. I mean, I thought you could probably find somewhere to hide in that cavern, but I knew you'd been morphed for a long time. I was worried you wouldn't be able to morph back without getting caught. It's good to see you."
"Good to see you too, Jake," he said. "How are the others?"
"Alive," I said. "Alive. I guess that's all that counts."
"Yes, that is all that matters."
"Come on, Tobias," I said. "Morph back. You can stay here. I'll even let you have the bed. I could sleep on nails, I'm so tired." He didn't say anything. And I guess in my heart I'd known it all along. I just didn't want to admit it. "Come on, Tobias," I said again. "Morph back."
"Jake."
"Just come on, back to human now, dude. No more flying tonight."
"I hid in the cavern for a while," he said. "They didn't see me, but I had to stay out of sight till I could get out. Jake, it took too long. Too long. More than 2 hours."
I just stared at him, at his laser-focused eyes, at his wicked beak and sharp talons, and at his wings, at the broad, powerful wings that let him fly. I guess this is me from now on, Tobias said. I knew there were tears falling down my cheeks, but I didn't care anymore.
It's okay, Jake. Like you said, we're alive.
I went to the window and looked up at the stars. Somewhere up there, around one of those cold, twinkling stars, was the Andalite homeworld. Somewhere up there was hope.
They'll come, Tobias said. The Andalites will come. And until then?
I nodded and wiped away my tears. Yeah, I said. Until then, we fight.
This is MacLeod Andrews. We hope that you have enjoyed this production of Animorphs, Book 1, The Invasion, by K.A. Applegate. This program was produced at Mosaic Audio and directed by Mike Land. Executive producer, Melissa R. Ellard. Print edition published by Scholastic, Inc. Text copyright 1996 by Catherine Applegate. Production copyright 2020 by Scholastic, Inc. Scholastic, Animorphs, and associated logos are trademarks and/or registered trademarks of Scholastic, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.